He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I heard the news when I landed on my flight from Los Angeles at Kennedy Airport. I had a million messages. Twitter was off the hook. Facebook, every kind of news outfit you can imagine, reporting the tragic and bitterly ironic death of Bob Simon, the legendary correspondent from 60 Minutes. Here's the way the CBS anchor Scott Pelley called it.
We have some sad news tonight from within our CBS News family. Our 60 Minutes colleague Bob Simon was killed this evening. It was a car accident in New York City.
So there you had it, the veteran newsman who had won 27 Emmys, incredibly, in a fantastic career that spanned five decades. He was killed in a crash, and if you see the tabloids, they have the picture of the Lincoln he was driving in, the livery cab he was driving on the West Side Highway, or 12th Avenue there by 30th Street by the heliport. It was mangled. And you know, as always happens, I ran into Bob Simon from time to time over the years, either over in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or in the Middle East someplace, or at CBS, where our daytime talk show was housed for 8 or 9 years. Nice guy. I had no idea his background. You don't check on someone's biography when they're working alongside you or near you. But this guy was born in the Bronx, 1941. Bob Simon was a Phi Beta Kappa with a history degree from Brandeis, a Fulbright scholar. He won the Peabody Award in 2000 for a body of work by an outstanding international journalist on a diverse set of critical global issues, working, as Noam Layden said, in his newscast with his own daughter, 60 Minutes producer, which is wonderful and also poignant.
Yeah, you know, amazing to, who would dream of that as a dad, to be able to work with your daughter? And you've heard exceptional things about her over the years. They've worked together for a long time.
He was most vividly the memory held captive by Saddam Hussein after he was captured by Iraqi forces in the desert near the Kuwaiti border in the first Gulf War back in January 1991. He was held prisoner of war for 40 days. So rest in peace, Bob Simon. Our condolences to his widow and his daughter and to the entire 60 Minutes and CBS News family. He was really one of the best writers. You know, you think about TV correspondents and what they do. You don't think so much about the words they pen. He was a terrific writer, and he will be sorely missed by CBS. It's Lincoln's birthday today, everybody. I mean, the real Lincoln's birthday. He wasn't born on the third Monday of February every year. He was born on the 12th. Of February, our favorite president. Today is also the anniversary of the acquittal of President Bill Clinton, who was impeached by Congress, by the Republicans in Congress. Actually, everybody had a role in it. One thing I want to say before I get off the topic of Bob Simon, my mother-in-law, Nancy Levy, quotes an old Yiddish saying, and this is so relevant to Bob Simon: man plans, God laughs. You know that one?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Here's a guy who I'm sure, with all the times he put himself at risk, figured that's where it would happen. And where does it happen? In a livery cab on the West Side Highway in Manhattan. In the evening, 6:45 in the evening. Why it happened, I don't know. I mean, anything word on the heart attack? Was it a heart attack?
You know, the NYPD would not confirm that the driver behind the wheel of Simon's car had a heart attack. They would just detail his injuries, but they said they would give us more on their investigation later this morning.
But when you look at the Lincoln, it looks so savaged. there had to be some speed involved somehow. It was just awful. Let me take one quick call before I move on. I have a point I want to make about Lincoln's birthday. But here's Peter.
Hi, Geraldo.
Hi, Peter. Now, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm the I'm a Vietnam vet, the former head of terrorist intelligence and operations for the Port Authority Police Department.
Oh, how about that? Well, we admire you for your service. What's on your mind particularly today, Peter?
Well, I'm talking with your producer. Just wanted to relate some information.
Go ahead, please.
Positioning with regard to the capabilities of ISIS and the potentialities that they could...
Oh, that's great. I'm glad. Before you say, in other words, we were driving down Fifth Avenue. We were on Channel 5 with Greg Kelly and Rosanna Scotto this morning. And Marty Berman and I, the executive producer Peter is speaking about, we're just talking about how with ISIS on the defensive now, and they are about to be crushed. They are about to be destroyed. I have no doubt about that. This is when their desperate followers are most likely to do something like Grand Central Station, the Empire State Building, make some show to demonstrate to the world that although we're coming after them now, particularly if the president gets this war powers resolution, do something. Now, Peter, our caller, by chance is, or by arrangement with Marty, is telling us about the preparations or the feeling or the thinking in Port Authority. And Port Authority, of course, controls the World Trade Center site and so many others. So, Peter, go ahead, tell us.
Well, I haven't been involved with the Port Authority for several years since I retired, but I can tell you that the potentiality activity by ISIS or sympathizers in this country is at its greatest level at this point right now. And that's because of the, as you said, psychological propaganda in order to maintain their recruitment and funding status in the wake of.
So you're figuring as an expert that to keep the excitement, quote unquote, going among people who would be followers, to keep their recruitment going, they've got to do something. They got to show that they're not just on the ropes, right, Peter?
Right, and also they may alert and put into motion some of the sleeper cells that are in place in this country. And that's not a slap against the FBI or any other agency. It's mere reality. We are very porous. They've been coming into this country for over 20 years. They're probably in position now. It's just a matter of them acting on whatever plans that they have or targeting identification that they have put into place.
We got pretty good intelligence in this town, though. I have a lot of confidence in the NYPD. You think that they've got them in here in a way that, they're lone wolf types? What do you figure, Peter?
I'm looking at a lone wolf type who has had an epiphany, for better choice of words, and is being called to arms as a result of his own personal feelings.
So what can the city do?
City's just going to have to continue with their constant vigilance and intelligence gathering, and the people of the city and this country have to wake up and start being a little more alert as to what is happening. There's a stealth jihad movement going on throughout this country right under our nose, and we don't get involved with it very much.
All right, Pete, I appreciate it. Thank you. The whole like see something, say something thing. I was thinking about that the other day. Well, just yesterday, I was at JFK. I wanted to go to the men's room. So I had a rolly bag. I didn't want to drag it into the men's room. I left it outside. I said to myself, I hope it's here when I come back, because people are so paranoid, and they're paranoid for good reason. Obviously, as this expert tells us, this is the time. All right. As I was saying, it's Lincoln's birthday, and it's also the anniversary of the acquittal of President Bill Clinton. Now, I want to make this statement, and then I'll open the phone lines, 866-ARELDO, 866-437-2536. So I remember at CNBC, I was one of the few voices for the acquittal of President Clinton, who was impeached by Congress for lying to Congress about Paula Jones. And remember, I did not have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. So my point is, in the context of the current scandal that's going on, if President Bill Clinton can be impeached, but go on to beat the rap and go from disgraced, lying philanderer to one of the most admired and respected men in the world. The last survey I saw had him at number 4 after the Pope and a couple of other people. If he can go from disgraced to the 4th most admired people on earth, if Wild Bill can make that comeback from Paula Jones, Monica Lewinsky, all the rest of it, why can't Brian Williams come back from his killer suspension from NBC News? When to talk about that, I'll take your calls. What do you think of Bill Clinton and Brian Williams? There's a lot going on today.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Brian Williams, anchor and managing editor of Nightly News, has been suspended by NBC management for 6 months without pay. On a personal note, say it is an enormously difficult story to report. Brian is a member of our family, but so are you, our viewers. And we will work every night to be worthy of your trust.
All right, that's Lester Holt. I still say too bad about Brian Williams. I mean, I really believe that. And my condolences go to him and especially to his loving family for the wreck of his stellar career. I mean, it's not just the harsh 6-month suspension from which it is unlikely he'll ever return. It's the gaudy shaming that I've seen over the last couple of days. Some of it coming from people I know are full of crap. And a lot of it coming from pseudo-journalists who've never put themselves physically at risk. Now, Lester Holt, if I was NBC, and I'm not, but if I was, I would stick with Lester Holt in the meantime. He's a fine newsman, and he's part of a very solid news division that Brian Williams played a big role in structuring. So I'm talking about the juxtaposition of the Brian Williams controversy with the acquittal in 1999, on this date, of President William Jefferson Clinton on the 2 counts for which he was impeached. If you recall, he was impeached for lying during a deposition in the Paula Jones lawsuit, and he was impeached for corruption of justice for encouraging her not to tell the truth under oath. The House voted impeachment, the Senate on this date acquitted him. And look at where he is today. I mean, this is a nation of second chances. This is a nation of second chances. I mean, all the ups and downs of my life. I mean, you don't get to be 71 years old, 5 times married, with all of the stuff I've gone through, to still be on the air and to still have people rooting for me and listening to me or watching me, without a great deal of compassion in the audience and understanding. And a lot of you, a lot of you, whether you're in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, or your 70s, I've been part of your life for a very long time. Some people dug me during the talk show days or the Eyewitness News days or the 2020 days or hated me during Al Capone's vault or my nose getting broken or, you know, how many chances have I gotten? That's, how could I not be? You wonder why I'm such good friends with, like Michael Grimm, the disgraced former congressman from Staten Island, because I can relate to people who've been down and bruised and fight. And I don't think that you shun them forever. Bernie Kerik, the police commissioner, a hero GI, Department of Corrections. Look what he did in Rikers compared to where Rikers is today. A guy who's on probation and can't go to Jordan to help the king of Jordan fight the terrorists that Bernie told the king how to fight back in 2004, 2005. And now he can't go because the U.S. attorney in Westchester just won't give him anything. He put him in jail 3 years for that dopey apartment renovation. Now I just think Brian Williams screwed up. No one is minimizing his lie. But my goodness, let he who is without sin throw the first stone, man. Man. Okay, your calls. What are you thinking about today? Am I off base here? Here's Robbie in Pennsylvania. Hey, Robbie.
Hi, Rado. I'm lucky enough to get through quite a bit, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. But when you do the, you know, cast the first stone thing, it kind of wipes, takes my thunder, bro. Because it's an introspective thing, and that's my point. Twofold here. I think a lot of the people that you're talking to would look at a Brian Williams and go, you know, enough is enough. How many more talking heads do I need reading a teleprompter, injecting their political thoughts into my news? That's one. And interesting on this.
But that's a different issue, Robbie. That's a different issue.
Well, that's
because you could say I work at Fox News. I love Fox News. I love my colleagues at Fox News. But a lot of them get that same rap, but from the other side of the political spectrum from NBC. Like NBC is on one side, we're on the other side, but it's the same criticism. I mean, we're human.
Right. So I just wanted to bring that point up. And then the other thing too is with the political power that was behind President Clinton when he made the mistakes and he did the things that he did. It was really the political family that kept him he could have been buried in a heartbeat by that political.
But, you know, in Clinton's situation, what saved Bill Clinton was the fact the American people wanted him to be saved.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77-WABC.
A lot going on today. We are speaking specifically now about redemption. This is the anniversary of the acquittal of President William Jefferson Clinton, impeached for lying to the Congress of the United States and in a judicial proceeding and encouraging Paula Jones and Monica Lewinsky to lie as well about their relationship with him. But the Senate saw the evidence and said, not guilty. It's all politics. I was right on top of that whole thing. I had a wonderful source inside the White House, deep inside the White House. I can't tell you who. Excuse me a sec. I can't tell you. I'm sorry. Can't tell you who, but I had everything. I had the semen on the dress before anybody. I broke the story.
Well, Drudge always gets credit for that.
But
right?
I broke the Drudge had the semen on the dress. I had the fact that the result came back. The DNA was President Clinton.
So you had somebody very deep inside. So deep.
All right, what are you thinking about here? Second chances. We'll go with Gene in New Jersey first. What's up, Gene?
Hi, how are you, Geraldo?
Excellent, thank you.
First of all, I love you on The Apprentice. My kids love you. Good luck with your final.
Oh, man, thank you so much. I wish you could vote.
Maybe one day they'll switch it to that.
Yeah.
The second chance theory or what you're proposing out there, I think that's just for, like, regular people, for not for those that have a public podium and the power to affect millions of people. You know, they should be held to a higher standard.
What do you think of Bill Clinton right now, honestly? When you see him speaking, what's your first impression? I don't know if you're a Republican, Democrat. Eugene, what's your first impression?
I think he's a great speaker. I think he grabs the attention of people. But also in the back of my mind, I think that he broke a lot of rules, and a lot of people that were counting on him to do wonderful things, you know. But
if you saw him, if you were 4 feet away from him, what would you do?
I'm a polite guy. I would say hello.
Yeah, you'd go, you'd shake hands, you'd have a big smile on your face, and you wouldn't be thinking about Monica Lewinsky. You'd be thinking about the guy's a good guy, good heart.
No, I wouldn't be thinking that he's a good guy. I would be thinking just exactly what I said. I think that, you know, he let down the public. He was elected to do something.
Well, he definitely did that. He definitely let down the public.
I think people that get elected.
But that's an interesting point.
I should not abuse their power.
I get
that. They affect millions of people. Regular people get a second chance. Those people shouldn't.
Remember, all right, well, you know, I appreciate
that. That career.
I appreciate that. But let me just, hey, one thing. Brian Williams, he gets paid $10 million a year. He suspended 6 months. No pay. Guess what? Even if he comes back to work, even if they bring him back, he's got a contract. Even if they bring him back, he's paid $5 million, a $5 million fine.
Huge.
I mean, you got ball players deflating footballs and fixing games and spitting in umpires' faces and kicking, and they, you know, $5 million, that's more than A-Rod, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. I don't know for sure. But, you know, the one thing I see, though, is there's a difference when you say President Clinton, because for him, it was his personal issues, right? He was, you know, fooling around on his wife.
But he lied.
And he lied about it. But well, here's the difference. It wasn't, you can make an argument that he lied in his professional career. But with Brian Williams, it wasn't about something personal, because who cares about that? I think that's why people were willing to forgive him, because I don't care what you do at home. You only have to answer to your family there. But the professionally, as an anchor, he has to answer to everybody.
My sidekick, Noam Layden, with wisdom that I agree with. And it just harkened back to those days when, again, I was alone. Everybody else wanted him impeached. They wanted, the news media was the lynch mob in those days, makes this Brian Williams thing seem like small potatoes. I mean, we didn't have social media in 99. It wasn't that intense. But, I mean, every mainstream CBS, NBC, ABC, PBS, everybody that had a microphone was talking about how the guy lied and he should get, you know, I remember Sam Donaldson, my colleague at ABC, man, he was leading the charge.
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, I don't know, maybe Sam's a priest in his real life. I don't know, but I said at the time, and Crash, you could blame push to shove. That's what he was lying about. Did you beat me?
Say it again.
BJ.
There you go.
BJ. Old man lie about BJs. Yeah. All right. Here's Jerry in New Jersey. Hey, Jerry, what's up? What are you thinking about?
Good, Rollo. First, I want to say I've been following your career since the late 70s.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
It brought a lot of enjoyment to me and made me think a lot. A couple of fundamental differences, I think, between Clinton and Brian Williams. One, the public sense that Clinton is a witch hunt, and they didn't like the people that were prosecuting him.
True.
That's a big difference. Secondly, Clinton was in good company, and the American public knew it. Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and themselves.
Newt Gingrich, who was, leading the charge on the other side.
Yeah, people didn't know about Gingrich because he's a hypocrite, but American people themselves have had affairs and lied about it. And then the next, I think the most important thing, Clinton's lies didn't go to the heart of his qualifications to be president. And I compare Brian Williams more to Pete Rose. Pete Rose, the integrity of the game as a manager and a player is so fundamental to trust baseball that the games are on the up and up. If the news isn't on the up and up, you're gone. So I think Williams is gone forever unless NBC makes a calculation that they'll make money off of him. I don't see it.
Well, I just think that, Jerry, you are a very thoughtful and intelligent person. I appreciate your sincerity. That was an excellent analysis. Here's George in Long Island City. George, what are you thinking about?
Jerry just stole my thunder about Pete Rose comparing him, but another point,
I think that's good. Let's talk Pete Rose. Go ahead.
But another point is you got to realize that, you know, everybody, including yourself and everybody in news media, is – like judging this guy because you're a jury of his peers. And everybody in your industry, the media industry, is kind of like feeling sorry for him. Give him a break. Same thing happened with Clinton, okay? They were all politicians who were judging him at the time, the House and the Senate, especially the Senate. And they gave him a pass because they were his peers. Peers always give each other a pass. And if you look, get back to Pete Rose, all the retired ball players, okay, want him in the Hall of Fame. A lot of them come out and said so. But guess what? In baseball, your peers don't put you in the Hall of Fame. The writers do. And there's the bug. The writers won't put Pete Rose
Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame, George?
That's right. He should. Not for his managing, but for his playing abilities, yeah. If you want to, put a little asterisk there and say that, hey, this guy also cheated. The same with the guy.
How about Barry Bonds?
Steroids, yeah, put him in. God, even without it, he would have been a Hall of Famer. But you put that asterisk there to say he cheated, okay, at the time he cheated. But that didn't take away from his talent, and that's why he's in here. But look at his records, like, you know, a little bit jaded, because they are.
But, again, another very, very smart call, and I appreciate it. And I think the Pete Rose comparison is an excellent one. I don't know how you don't put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame or Barry Bonds. And it is the writers, and the writers have a different, I think that he's so smart. These last callers were so smart because they can be so bitchy. Sports writers particularly. And there's an envy there because they never played the game, most of them. I'm straining for a comparison and an analogy to the Brian Williams situation, but there's no doubt that Pete Rose was the hits leader by far. Right?
Oh, yeah.
More hits than anybody ever. Barry Bonds, more home runs than anybody ever.
Right.
And so one juiced and the other gambled, right? That's what happened. And the Hall of Fame, therefore, has excluded them. I just think that that's so wrong. That's so wrong. And I think the Hall of Fame itself has to have an asterisk. The asterisk has to read, nobody in here cheated, or at least nobody in here was caught cheating.
Right. Well, there you go.
Because they have sharpened spikes in the old days, you know, pine tar on the bats in the old days. The spitballs, remember spitballs?
Right. So
maybe that was before your time, but that was a big deal in my day. The spitters used to go like a knuckleball crazy. But, you know, I just come back to Jesus, man. Jesus, the best Jew ever. You know, he who is without sin throws the first. I just think that there's a whole religion based on that kind of compassion. There's a whole kindness based on that philosophy. And that's where we fall short. Our lives are so bitter sometimes. Life is short and it's hard and you work, and especially in February, and sometimes you lose the kindness. And so, I don't know, maybe that's what I'm advocating for. Kindness. 47 after. And that's so weird. In a talk radio show.
You don't hear that too often. No.
You got Savage saying that the aliens are bringing in an epidemic to kill us all.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Elvis Costello. I have to read this. I'm going to get to your calls momentarily. Or maybe at the top of the hour. Please be patient with me. The Celebrity Apprentice finale is Monday. I'm so psyched about it. I'm nervous and excited. It's really, a live finale. Nobody knows what the Donald is going to do. It's me and Lisa Gibbons, and I love Lisa. She's a very, very competent person. I've known her forever. She's iconic within that world of entertainment news, and she works hard. Her charity is to take care of the elderly, make sure that they are cared for in a dignified way, have everyone have a place to live. But I've got this from Top 10 Real Estate News. Donald Trump's first mansion is for sale. There's no denying Donald Trump has been one of the country's most notable entrepreneurs for almost 50 years. It goes on, bold and brash. Trump is happiest in the limelight. It goes on, his brand is found everywhere from Miami Beach condos to chocolates to spring water. But he talks about the first mansion, a 5.8-acre peninsula mansion, Greenwich, Connecticut. They bought it in 1982 for $4 million. Ivana got it when they got divorced in 91. She sold it in 98 for $15 million. Now the Trump mansion in Greenwich is for sale for $54 million. Can be yours for the slight fee of $54 million. It's only $5.4 million down.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And she rises to her apology. Anybody else would choose.
Hung out with Michael McDonald a bit from the Doobie Brothers, his birthday today. Hung out a bit with my next guest, my congressman, one of the best in the business. I honor him. Good friend to the Rivera family. Came by my brother Willie's wake in Lindenhurst. Representative Peter King joins us. Congressman, how you doing?
Rolla, how you doing? How's your family doing?
Everybody's great, thanks. My mom, slipped, big story, but my mom, 95 years old, slipped and fell, and so we're all going to Florida to see grandma tomorrow.
Okay.
When you have a family as big as mine, things are always happening. You've been in the news, a couple of points I want to get to, really important before I get back to our audience calls. The first is that you believe that the president seeking the war powers authority from Congress is, at least the way I saw it in Newsmax, abdicating his responsibility. Why do you think that, Congressman?
Because as commander-in-chief, he has the power. First of all, I think he has the power to do it without authorization from Congress. It's always better to get the authorization. But in the request, he's actually putting a time limit on how long he can be there, and he's limiting use of ground troops, and it's even vague as to what he's allowing and disallowing. They're making it very difficult to use ground troops. And to me, a commander-in-chief should never telegraph to the enemy what limitations we have. Don't put a time limit on it. Don't say what troops you're going to use or not use. Let them think we're going to use every weapon at our disposal and we're willing to stay there forever. That's what it takes to beat them. Now, as president, as commander-in-chief, he can adapt his policy as he goes along, but never put it in writing. Don't make it official what limitations you're going to impose on yourself. Keep the enemy guessing at all times.
Do you agree? I think this. I don't know if you agree with me. I think that the president is right that ISIS is in retreat, that we are going to crush them. What does Congressman Peter King say?
No, I don't think it's definite. I think that Jordan has shown, and also the Kurds have shown, that ISIS is not invulnerable, that we can stop them. But on the other hand, in the last 6 months, they've doubled the territory they have in Syria, and it's pretty much a stalemate now in Iraq. So I think we have to keep the pressure up, and not limit the use of what type of force we're going to use. But I think Jordan has shown, I mean, Jordan is a tiny country. They've shown what can be done when we go all out. So, we are going to defeat ISIS in the end. I don't want to have so many innocent people killed along the way and so many hostages either burned to death or beheaded. And this is no slam dunk. This is no guarantee. And we have to keep the pressure on, and we should not be tying the hands of the president should not be tying his own hands. I'll leave it at that.
I agree with that, and I just hope that he'll do whatever is necessary to defeat this vile enemy, these savages who must be eradicated from the face of the earth. I want to go about 2,000 miles north to Ukraine. Overnight, the Russians, even as they had the ceasefire talk, sent in 50 more tanks. This looks to me like a real crisis brewing. It's underreported with everything else going on, but it looks like a major confrontation with Russia that makes everything else pale in comparison in terms of national and world security. What say you particularly about the president being with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel and, talking about let the sanctions play out? What does Peter King say?
No, we have to be much more aggressive. To me, it's important that we arm the Ukrainians. At least, listen, the Ukrainians are never going to defeat the Russians, but the fact is, if they can make it difficult for them, if they can make it difficult for their proxies, if they can make the Russians pay a price, that will put pressure on Putin, certainly from the Russian people, to back off.
But isn't that a recipe for escalation? I mean, if we give the Ukrainians arms, and that medium-level fighting will really be acute and high-level. I mean, doesn't it risk general war in Europe?
Well, the alternative to that is to have Russia keep going, because otherwise Russia will not be stopped. And this is the first military territorial grab in Europe since the end of World War II, as far as I can think of any other. Can't think of any other European country which has moved on another militarily the way the Russians have. This is really breaking a 60-year status quo, and to allow that to go on, what would be next? I can tell you from talking to European leaders, certainly in the Baltic states, talking to NATO people who deal with the Poles and Czechs all the time, especially the Poles are very concerned that Russia is going to, if they're allowed to do this, are going to continue moving around their boundaries, around their borders, and that provides instability, which in the long run can end up with a greater war. And, not to go back to Munich in the 1930s, but often when you look the other way and allow aggression to proceed, it ends up resulting in a much larger war.
Congressman Peter King is my guest. My driver last night was from Georgia, the nation of Georgia in Russia, and a part of Georgia was glommed by the Russians
right.
a couple of years back. So they've already demonstrated that they have imperialistic tendencies. Well, historically they have, and this is really, it's really troublesome. Do you think the president is being decisive enough? So you want defensive weapons given to the Ukrainians, basically. Does that include airplanes?
Again, we can decide what they are. I think I wouldn't be telegraphing what we're going to give, but certainly anti-tank weaponry, anti-aircraft weaponry.
Shoulder-fired missiles, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that type of thing, right.
Oh, I totally agree with that. So generally speaking here, what do you see? This is my final question. What should we really be focused on? And you know what? I'm not going to ask you any more national security. I want to ask you a human question. What should happen with Brian Williams at NBC?
You know, I know him a little bit. I feel badly for what's happening, but I think he's lost his credibility as a...
Forever?
I would hope not. Listen, I believe in original sin. I believe people make mistakes. I think there's a... And I'm not into psychobabble. There's some sort of a problem here where he exaggerated when he didn't have to. I think that... I would hope he's able to find a way to come back. I'm not one of these people that wants to... You know, blame people forever. If he can show that he can come back and do it, then he should be given the opportunity.
Congressman Peter King, I knew you'd say that. I mean, you and I, we went through the Bernie Kerik thing, and we saw the same thing, and essentially good man made a mistake.
Absolutely. And all of us make mistakes. Some of them get publicized.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Congressman, thank you. I appreciate you coming.
Well, thank you.
And you're really a friend. I think you do a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
All right, brother. Okay, so what are you thinking? In Yonkers, Bill, thank you for your patience. Craig. Most people in public life are sociopaths. I got that part.
Lost him after that.
Yeah, I was wondering what he was selling. What's his deal? James in Long Island, thank you. I assume you're not a sociopath. How are you?
Listen, I really don't understand... Peter King. Peter King, he badmouths Ted Cruz, which I don't like to begin with, but he badmouths as a lunatic, a maverick. But it's always Peter King, John McCain, and Lindsey Graham urging us to send troops into these countries where you admit the air power is doing the job.
I think it is. I think the congressman is being too pessimistic about ISIS. I think that if I was the head of ISIS right now, I wouldn't ever walk outside. I'd be in some tunnel someplace hoping that no one rats me out.
Right, exactly. We don't need ground troops over there. We George Bush screwed us big time over there. We don't need to get back into that mess again.
Yeah, I agree with you, James. And I tell you, talk about mistakes. I mean, not mistakes of character. Although, I don't know, you know, in terms of the people who were promulgating the lie about weapons of mass destruction, were they really certain? Was the intelligence really that clear cut that they could make the unequivocal statements that they did in 2002, 2003 that got us into that disastrous war that destabilized the entire Arab world, the entire Middle East. And, you know, we're still tasting the bitter fruits of that one. You know, just imagine if we hadn't messed with Saddam Hussein. Well, put it that way. Let me put the blame on Saddam Hussein. Not in 2003, but in 1990. That's really where it started when you think about it. 1990, Saddam Hussein says, I got Iraq, one of the biggest oil reserves on earth, but I want Kuwait. It's like if you look at a map, it could be part of Iraq. I want Kuwait. He invades Kuwait, destabilizes everybody, and we're still living. That's the part that really started everything going to hell in a handbasket. Let me take Dan before I take a break. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Yeah, Geraldo, how are you?
Good, man.
You know, I was going to say about Clinton.
Go ahead.
You know, he's a lovable rogue.
A lovable sort of like, rogue. He is a lovable rogue.
Well, and that's the difference. A guy like Buddy Cianci, the Providence
Another mayor. Lovable rogue. I like Buddy Cianci.
But you take guys like Sheldon Silver, he's not a lovable guy.
Yeah, he sure isn't. Sheldon Silva, the now disgraced former Speaker of the New York State Assembly, now facing a major indictment and not at all a lovable rogue. You got that right. But I wonder, Dan has something there. I wonder if it's, is it personality that saves certain people from the kind of, you know, sanctions that might fall if they were more of a grim and unpopular figure? Would they suffer, you know, just desserts?
Well, it doesn't get any more charismatic than Bill Clinton.
It surely doesn't.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie. Not a single time. Never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
He did not have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. You know what his defense was? And this is this is a pretty clever one. His defense about the lie was, and, you know, again, I remind our listeners that I was the one that broke the news that the DNA on the semen stain was his. So he obviously, at least one time, had an orgasm, that blah, blah, you know. And his defense was that oral sex wasn't sex. Like oral sex and anal sex, that wasn't like really sex, right? Because it wasn't vaginal sex. So what do you think of that?
What do I think of that argument? You just want to get me in trouble, don't you?
Well,
what do you think is the real question? Is that sex?
Well, I can see how he was so smart in parsing everything. And I believe that it is possible in his mind that if it wasn't vaginal sex, it wasn't really sex in the cosmic or literal sense, that it wasn't.
Well, you know, if you ask like a 20...
It made more... I could do it more convincing back in 1998, 1999. Now, a little more difficult. I think any of our listeners who tried that excuse with their spouses...
Didn't work out well.
Not work out very well. Here's Vince in New Jersey. What's up, Vince?
I got to tell you, I agree with you 100%. That wasn't sex. And if you read, it was some sick, perverted... weird stuff that he was. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. Is your wife listening? All right, go ahead.
No, but I mean, you know, come on. A guy's. He was a 19-year-old intern.
Was she 19 or no? She was 21, I think.
She was a little older.
I think she was 21.
Come on. If that was your.
I mean, now what's the difference?
But go ahead. But here's the thing about it's funny that you mentioned Brian Williams in the same sentence with Bill Clinton, because what you see happens between these people is they all defend each other, and they made Bill Clinton. They recovered Bill Clinton. They did everything. His number one right-hand man, Stephanopoulos, is now a journalist. I mean, come on. Now
he has a big show, a big hit show on Good Morning. No, he's not Good Morning America. He's Good Morning America.
Yeah, Sunday show. But that's
and the
exactly
Sunday show,
my
right.
Point. They, and then, you know, Bill, it was Obama the other day was saying the problem with his popularity is that we used to have one source for the news. In other words, the three major networks can lie and hide and do whatever they wanted, and there was no media. There was no Geraldo show. There was no Sean Hannity, any of these shows. It was only the news media telling us what they wanted us to know.
So well, you're right about that. It was definitely only one voice, three different networks, but it was the same Upper West Side crowd, no doubt.
Yeah, and that's what we have today. And you know, you said...
Oh, I don't think we have that today. Today, it's not that.
No, I mean, as far as with Bill Clinton, I mean, you know, that's why... Bill Clinton has regained his popularity, not because he's done so much great work. The guy, the only reason he became popular is because the Republicans won the Congress, changed the laws, worked fair, all that stuff happened. You know, the economy grew, and Bill Clinton shamelessly took credit for it. I mean, he was against all those things, and that's what we see Obama today taking credit for gas prices going down when it was his energy secretary that said, we need gas prices up around $10 a gallon. So, you know, all these people are protected by the Brian Williams, and Brian Williams protects them, and then they come on your show, Peter King, and then they protect him, and everybody needs a second chance. Come on. These people are destroying lives. The Clintons have destroyed so many.
But Vince, now you're getting a little too heavy, too deep. Now you're sounding like a person who's perfect, and I doubt that.
No. Geraldo, there's 300 million people in this country.
Right.
We can have somebody that's honest in government. We don't need, there's one president. And if that's the best we can do is an Obama or a Bill Clinton, you got to remember, how many accusations...
Was Mitt Romney perfect?
No, but he was more of a moral character and somebody...
Well, you may be right about his morality than Bill Clinton. I think that Barack Obama's a pretty moral person. He may disagree with his life philosophy, but I never heard anyone bust him. He may be wrong, but I don't think he's lying about anything. But anyway, Vince, a nice call. So smart today. Oh, the guy that tried to kill Curtis Sliwa is coming up.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
There's a new mob book out, Gotti's Rules. This isn't so much about Gotti Sr. as Gotti Jr. and a hitman, mobster, playboy named John Alight. Written by George Anastasia, terrific writer based in Philly. He wrote about the guy that wanted to kill me, the Scarfo guys down there in Philly. But the interesting thing is that... they tell the whole story of when they wanted to kill Curtis Sliwa. Well, they didn't want to kill him. They wanted to hurt him because Curtis, when he was on the radio in the early 90s, was relentlessly going after John Gotti Sr. in a way that was humiliating.
He had this section called Mob Talk that he
Mob
would
Talk.
Yeah.
So they talk about, I got him right here. He's John Alight is here, the mobster. How you doing, John?
Good, Geraldo. Great to see you again.
Did you go to jail?
Yes, I've been in prison several times over 2 decades now.
And what was your prison time for? What were you convicted of?
This last term for homicides, a RICO, and close to 100 assaults, baseball bat beatings, and violence, basically.
So you really were a badass and a bad person. How'd you get out of jail?
Well, I was a good bad guy, guys say. I was violent towards the street guys that were involved in the drug business, people who were involved in the life that we call, but not against people like Curtis.
So were you a snitch? Is that why they gave you a cut to your break?
Well,
I don't mean to be harsh. Were you an government informant?
What happened was I believed in this life. And when my boss and my friend at the time, John Gotti Jr., was going in as a snitch and a rat, in 2005, and he was rat chasing other guys. Actually, he was an informer at 2005. Him and some of the other fellow bosses, they went against me. So, I'm not a dummy. I had to come in and I cut a deal with the government after I found out that these guys.
And what are you doing now? You live with your real name? You live out in the open?
I live out in the open. I live under my real name. I go around and I'm trying to do speeches and talks and talk to kids about how this life is garbage.
What kind of name is Alight? I don't know, John.
I'm Albanian descent.
Albanian?
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite countries. I'm an honorary Albanian. Is that why you weren't a made man, because you're Albanian?
Exactly.
Most of the Albanians I know are also Muslim. Are you a Muslim?
Originally, not, yes, and then I converted to a Catholic.
You converted. All right. So John Alight, this is the story of John Alight and Junior Gotti, the demise of the American Mafia, Gotti's Rules, by New York Times bestselling author George Anastasia. But let me just read you this part of it. Excuse me. I'm trying to shut the mic off. Sorry. All right, here. Shortly before Gotti Sr. trial began in federal court in Brooklyn in the winter of 1992, Curtis Sliwa, the founder of the Guardian Angels, radio talk show host in the city, went on a rant about the Gottis. It was a regular theme of Curtis' broadcasts. And it drove Junior Gotti nuts. He's bad-mouthing Sr. every day, Alight says. One day I'm taking a walk with Junior and he says to me, I want to hit this Sliwa. Alight says he couldn't believe what he heard. What are you, effing nuts? He asked Junior, are you out of your effing mind? Alight said he tried to talk Junior out of hitting Sliwa. It wasn't a smart move. All right, but hitting Sliwa was a way to make people think Junior cared about what they were saying about his dad. So they put the hit out on him, put him in the hospital. A frustrated Junior said of Sliwa, ordering these guys to beat Sliwa as bad as you can without killing him. All right, so anyway, they rig out a taxi. They know Sliwa's habits. He lives in the East Village at the time. Sliwa hails their cab, and it's the mobster driving with another mobster crunched down in the front seat. Sliwa gets in the back seat. The door's locked. Yannotti pops up from the front seat, pulled a gun, shot Sliwa in the thigh and groin. Later, there was testimony that the other guy was shocked at Sliwa. They're supposed to beat the radio talker, not shoot him. Junior beat the Sliwa charge three times. Why'd he beat the charge? How'd he beat the charge?
Well, how he beat the charge is the same thing he's doing now. He's a Spin City. Him and his attorney, Charlie Carnese, are good at keep lying. They're kind of like Lethal Weapon 2, Joe Pesci plays. He'll tell you, okay, KKK, okay, here's my new story. Here's my new lie.
Here's Gotti talking about the Sliwa thing.
Getting on to Sliwa, Sliwa's a situation that's very unique. Sliwa is somebody that he hoped, he prayed, he needed the Gottis to shoot him. That's what he needed, because he built a career out of it. He was a nobody that nobody paid attention to. But once that had happened to him, once he had gotten shot, okay, he turned around and turned it into a radio career, making $500,000 a year, and he became a bit of a media darling. The fact that he's irritated every entity in New York City throughout his career really was of little matter. But the fact that he cashed in on the accusation that the Gottis had him kidnapped and shot, well, that's a little different. And I've always ribbed, I've always had Charlie ribbing for that, and anybody else would come across.
The one and only Curtis Sliwa was shot by these mobsters that just walked into my studio. Curtis, so you hear this stuff, and it's your life, 1992, and they're trying to justify the shooting because you did okay after you were shot. They could have killed you.
I did pretty good before I got shot. I was already on the radio doing Morning Drive in the number one market in all of America.
What do you feel sitting opposite this guy? You're physically 4 feet away from this mobster.
Well, remember, I've grown up with mobsters my whole life. Canarsie, East New York, Brownsville, Ozone Park, Howard Beach. They were in my own family. So the fact that he testified in the fourth trial against John Gotti Jr., hope to put him away, he's trying to square the deal. In terms of will I ever shake his hand? Hell no. If he slips and falls and breaks his neck in the bathroom, God's done justice. But that's my opinion till the day I die.
But they tried to kill you.
Oh, no, I know that. And I knew that was being planned. Because obviously, the word got around that Sliwa every day is on the radio. And remember, Gotti Sr., before he goes to trial, he's listening every day. They give him an AM radio. And he's dropping the F-bomb. And he tells his son, you got to kill Sliwa. And by the way, they tooled me up with baseball bats first. Kaplan, Ruggiero, McLaughlin hit me 36 times. Thought that I would shut up. And I came back, I took that licking and came back ticking. And then I told the story on air, exactly what John Ali testified in court about the Silver Fox Lounge and how Danny Silver got gutted out by John Gotti Jr. because who told me? My cousin Butchie, who was half in the bag, who was at the bar, said, please, Curtis, don't ever reveal this to anybody because my life will be in jeopardy.
So, John Ali, how do you feel sitting next to Curtis?
Well, I don't blame him. Obviously, if guys are trying to kill him and hurt him, and I'm part of that Gambino family, I would feel the same way as him. The difference is when John Gotti Jr. brought that hit to me and Mikey Scars, we told him no way. John Gotti Jr. is incompetent. He wanted his name out in the media. He didn't do it for his father's sake. He did it to get his own name out there. And like Curtis said, they baseball batted him, they shot him, they did this. We don't do that to media people. If you say something against me, I'm not supposed to go out and try to kill you and hurt you. So I denied killing him. That was the original thing. He asked me to kill him. I said no. He asked me to hurt him. I said no. Mikey Scars backed that play with me. He threatened that he would kill me. So if I didn't do it, I still didn't do it because it's not what we do. We hurt each other on the street. Nothing to do with media.
One of the mobsters who conspired to hurt or kill Curtis Sliwa, John Alight, in the studio live with Curtis sitting scant feet away. They won't shake hands. We won't let them go to the men's room together. We'll talk more with them after this break.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
An extraordinary reunion going on in my studio here high above Madison Square Garden. John Alight, part of the crew that was going to kill Curtis Sliwa, in studio here with Curtis Sliwa. You have any lasting leftovers from getting beat up and shot at?
Yeah, well, the hollow point bullets have turned my plumbing inside out and all around. So every time I sit on the porcelain palace, I curse John Gotti Jr. saying, but I want to thank my cousin, Joey G., the Cheech from Howard Beach, who used to attack me with a baseball bat. And that's what kept me from being a frozen vegetable when Kaplan, Ruggiero, and McLaughlin hit me about 36 times. It was Joey G., the Cheech from Howard Beach. All the tricks that I learned as a kid.
Where's Gotti Jr. now, John Alight?
Telling tales still. He won't apologize to Curtis. And
he's still free?
He's free. He's running around. He's scared to come into the neighborhood. He won't go to any of the boroughs. And he knows guys want to hurt him or kill him. So he's hiding behind his attorney and still spinning tales instead of being a man and apologizing to this man sitting next to me.
Gotti's Rules is the book by George Anastasia, a terrific writer. He's got the rules in the back of the book. He talks about how no member of any crew in the presence of the boss may wear sunglasses. Always keep underlings waiting. It reminds them who's in control without saying a word. Never talk business indoors. The government has ears. When charged with a crime, no matter the circumstances, do not plead guilty. It's a sign of weakness. Always manipulate the facts to present a positive image. Perception is reality. Are you, John Alight, manipulating the facts now to make yourself look good?
Not at all. There's nothing to look good. I'm actually denouncing that life, and I'm out running around trying to tell kids, follow Curtis, follow guys like yourself, and become men. Being on the street and do what I did, I'm not proud of. I can't take it back. And my word now is to go out the rest of my life and try to get kids to understand it's a bad choice of living. To be a man means to go to work and live the right way, go to school, and be a legitimate person.
All right, that's John Alight. Don't do what he did. Gotti's Rules, the book. Curtis, thanks. Curtis and Kubi, follow me right here, the Big Hit Show on 77 WAC. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your calls, brilliant calls today, and I'll see you tomorrow.